The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by Palm Beach Atlantic University, Orlando. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, everybody. It's great to have you along today. My name is Mike Gilland, and I have with me today in the studio Eric Spivey, somebody I just met. Eric, I'm up in the studios at Mark Radio in Gainesville for this recording, and you're here as well as the senior pastor. It's First Baptist.
First Baptist Church, Gainesville.
And it is right on the row of churches, 39th Avenue.
Yes.
I mean, there are a gathering of churches on 39th Avenue.
We are at the end, the far northwest end, where 39th Avenue ends at County Road 241. That's us on the corner.
Now, that is not the location that you guys started off. We'll talk about that later on in this segment. But you built that beautiful facility.
Yes.
Right at the corner of 39th Avenue and 241. What was it, about 2010, you said?
Yep. We started about 11 years ago. We moved in 2010.
Wow.
So it's we've had a good decade at the corner of learning how to be good neighbors to our friends in Northwest Gainesville.
And of course, that's right down the road from where I was once a pastor at Abundant Grace. And we love this area. I do believe that you're situated on one of the most beautiful campuses of churches in the whole Gainesville, Alachua County area. But that 241, that road driving toward Alachua, is probably one of the most beautiful drives anybody can make.
It really is. I mean, the farms out there, subdivisions, it's a really beautiful space and Alachua County for sure.
And the pastoral feel of that area, and you do have that sense that you're kind of in the county.
I say that we are at this sort of incredible intersection. It's not just an intersection of a corner. In some ways, it's an intersection of cultures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you move 10 miles to the west of us and you are in rural Florida.
Right.
You move 10 miles to the east inside Gainesville and you are in urban academic community. And
right.
there are two different cultures, two different ways of approaching who Christ is. And it's fascinating for us to be on that corner for me. I think that's a great place to be a light for the gospel.
You know, you mentioned that, and it's really true that anytime there's a city like Gainesville that houses a major university, it becomes a cultural mix of thought and history and even political viewpoints. We know that that is something that is very evident in Alachua County as well, with a dynamic university like UF being there. It's also an international mission field.
Yes.
You've got people from all over the world coming to this university.
It is. And I think there's I talk about the fact that for those who are coming from the Gainesville side, you know, sometimes part of that is trying to help people construct a faith. Who is Jesus? What does Jesus mean to me? What is my identity in Christ, and how do I live that? And those who are coming from a cultural background, where Christianity is sort of built into and baked into the culture, sometimes that means trying to deconstruct faith enough to understand who Christ is away from the culture. What does it mean to follow Christ in this world? Not just because my parents told me, or because that means, you know, that being American and being a Christian are all the same thing, but what does it mean to follow Jesus now and live his word in the world? And it's a really great place to be of both constructing faith for the first time and finding faith in a way that's meaningful even beyond the culture.
Now, there's a lot of people, Eric, that would talk about polls and they would talk about numbers. They would talk about young people. And you get to see this really up close here, being a pastor in a community that has as much of an emphasis on the college age young people that are here, that are coming from all over. The feel many have is that a lot of the young people coming up today are making a bit of a return to some values that would have been from our generation pastors. I've talked to people who, in other words, worked for pro-life organizations, and there seems to be a real movement by a lot of college-age students right now that are really going back to the Bible somewhat, or back to the values of the Bible when it comes to life. Are you seeing that here?
I can't. I don't have a lot of access to the university. Where we went, our move to where we talked about, to the corner of Gainesville, has moved us away from the university. So we really, compared to our connections to in the 20th century when we were a downtown church and really connected as a First Baptist church to the university right down the street, it's not quite the same anymore. So I couldn't quite speak to that from a personal perspective.
I get it. Tell us a little bit about your background. How did you come to know the Lord? Where did you grow up?
Sure. Well, I grew up outside of Savannah, Georgia. My dad was a Baptist pastor. And so I grew up in the 70s and 80s in a little town called Port Wentworth, Georgia. And so learned about faith from home and from church. Our lives were surrounded by church. But so coming to faith was about just saying yes to Christ. The Lord, saying all these things I'd heard and saying, okay, this is who I need to be. The big part of that for me, though, was, you know, probably after coming to faith was having a sense of call. And that was probably a bigger, even more impactful experience for me. What does it mean to be called when your dad's a pastor and all you've seen is that, but you still feel God is leading you to do something, but you don't know what that means? And so for me, it was simply saying yes to the Spirit that there, even when I was like 14 or 15 years old, saying, God has something for me and I have to say yes for that. And that was a real powerful moment in my life of saying that this is what my life is. My life matters. God has something for me. I don't know what it is. Part of my task of my life is to figure out what that is, to explore and figure that out. And that's kind of what my ministry has been about for. I've just continued to sort of live into God's call in my life, see what that means during education, opportunities, and it's been a lot of fun. So a lot of exploring. So I never felt like, hey, I need to be a senior pastor. I've seen what my dad had to go through as a pastor. And I was like, I can do a lot of other things besides be a pastor of a church. And so I tried all those things, and God just eventually led me and my calling back to leading as pastor.
And that's so great to hear that a PK had that love for the Lord, even though you weren't sure you wanted to follow in the steps of your dad in the ministry. Yet it sounds like you did not have what it so often happens to preachers' kids, where they are kind of not wanting anything to do with the Lord or what their parents have chosen. That doesn't sound like that happened to you.
No, I think my dad and my mom both helped me to... They were free enough to allow me to sort of be myself, and so our home was filled with a lot of love that gave me freedom. You know, in fact, when I first felt God calling me into ministry, I was probably like eighth or ninth grade, and came to my dad and I said, Dad, I think God's calling me into ministry. Wow. I think this. My dad said, No, he's not. No, he's God. You're just thinking through this too much. You spend too much time in church, too much time with me. No, that's not it. And so it took me a couple of years to figure out, okay, this is real. When I went back to my dad, I said, what's going on? He said, I knew that if God was calling you to ministry, then it's bigger than me. And if he was going, and you couldn't just come to say, just receive it.
Yeah.
You know, if God was going to be big enough to call you into ministry, it was going to go against, it was going to have to go back with my own pushback. And he was right. So I think it made it more real for me in that way. And I think it was a big part of how they raised me and what that meant for me.
Now, well, that's worked out to be good for you.
Yes.
What was it like for you in the moment?
You know, I don't think I've ever thought about that. I think it just like, okay, well, maybe I'm not, I just like church. I think about God all the time. I think about Christ all the time. Maybe that's just who I am. And so it took me a couple of years to say, no, this is something real. I need to, and I remember coming down, we still had revivals during that time, coming down during a revival and saying, telling my dad, no, this is real. This is, and it was like saying yes to something that just fit perfectly for who I was. And then we just sort of lived into that, into the rest of my life.
So from the moment that you began to realize that this was real, that this was something that you're going to, was there a particular aspect of ministry life that you really love more than any other? Was it the study? Was it the presence of worshiping God?
You know, for me, it was just simply trying to understand what this meant. I kept waiting for God to sort of kind of come down and kind of hit me on the, over the head and say, okay, Eric, this is what you're supposed to be. This is what you're supposed mm-hmm. to do. And so when it didn't happen, I just sort of kind of kept trying new things. So during college, I had a lot of connections in areas that in ministries that did kind of mission work in resort areas. So my first couple of years, summers, I was in Gatlinburg, Tennessee.
That's not a bad area.
It's a wonderful, wonderful area. I worked with a ministry there that you know, so I was doing campground. I was doing speaking in campgrounds and doing worship services. And one summer I was a chaplain at a go-kart track. I worked in the go-kart track, and then I, you know, was a youth minister for all these kids who were kind of misplaced and working at this place. And we did Bible studies and worship services there. I did a summer at a church in California that was in a resort community, and they did all these interesting ministries. And I just began to say, and all of a sudden that fit for me, because what never fit, I just sort of received a lot of sort of how we did church didn't always fit for me. And mm-hmm. so this idea of doing mission work in a place where people don't expect you to think about Christ mm-hmm. became the place that really was a fascinating place for me. It was a very creative place. It was the kind of place that you said, okay, where can we take the gospel today? And let's go see what it looks like there. And so that's kind of what I did. So when I came out of college, I went to Dollywood, and I worked as a theme park up in Pigeon Forge, and I was the chaplain at Dollywood. So that's where I learned how to be a pastor. It was in a chaplain area. I had 2,000 employees. I was their pastor on the park. But they had this beautiful old country church that's in part of one of their themed areas, and like a little village. And so I would go up there every Sunday and I would preach. And so I'd preach to people who were just walking in from the park, and but we have employees who would come in. And so I figured out quickly that was very pastoral, that I loved being a pastor, that mm-hmm. I loved caring for people, walking with them in their opportunities and challenges in their lives. And that was an interesting place, because I didn't have to worry about trying to run a church. I didn't have to try to figure out all the administrative stuff, all of the challenges of trying to grow this or that. It was just kind of pure preaching, weddings, funerals, pastoral care, and that's kind of where I learned how to be a preacher, how to be a pastor.
Did you interact with Dolly Parton yourself?
I met her once, and she said, "Great to know you." And but she is everything that you would imagine her to be, both on and off camera. She's just as real, and she's loved greatly by the folks there.
So. Years ago in the 70s up in Indiana, I was involved in a country radio station. Mm-hmm. I started off and used to do MCs for the big country show. I would be out there introducing. One of the people we brought in was Dolly Parton. Mm-hmm. So I had a chance to be tapped on the shoulder and said, Dolly Parton wants to meet with you.
All right.
So that was crazy. Got my picture taken with her. It was just a wonder. She was so gracious.
Yes.
And so much fun. To get to know back then.
I think that's always the word for her, is authentic. And mm-hmm. And so she doesn't own the park. She has a big interest in the park. There's another company called Hershen Enterprises that run that park and several other parks and themed the areas around the country. But they were a company of faith, and that was part of what they did. And so I didn't work for the company. I worked for that ministry that I worked with in Gatlinburg. So I still did other things like ski ministry and other types of things. But it was a great place. That's where I began to realize, okay, I'm pretty good at pastoring, but I had to learn all of that, you know. So I had to learn how to prepare for a sermon, how to preach, how to do pastoral care, how to do funerals, how to do weddings. And so that kind of set me on this sort of eventually finding my way back into a congregation for the first time, and then ultimately into a pastorate.
But, you know, you're a people person and you do care about people. And that's
yes.
something that you got to really exploit in a fun way. You got to really just get bathed in your love for people and seeing them come alive in God and
yep.
hear the gospel.
Yes. It was a great way to, you know, I think I love chaplain work. I love all chaplains, and I've been a chaplain at a hospital. But I, you know, there's great military business chaplains that work in factories and other kind of places, you know, law enforcement and other kind of chaplains that do such a great job. And what you do, you're being the presence of God where people are most at need, mm-hmm. you know, and people never expected to see a chaplain at a theme park. There's still a chaplain there now. He's now full time at the park, and we started it, and he's just doing a great job in there probably for 10, 15 years now.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. And that's Dollywood. I'm talking today to Eric Spivey, and Eric is the senior pastor at First Baptist in Gainesville. And, you know, this is a beautiful area up here to come to after that. Not a bad place after seeing the gorgeous views that Gatlinburg and mm-hmm. Dollywood and all of that. Your growing up years were more in that part of the country, I'm taking.
Well, I grew up on the coast in Savannah, went to Alabama for college, then some time in Tennessee, and then went to Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Lived in Beaufort, South Carolina for about 13 years, and also on the coast. And then my first senior pastorate was up in Georgia, up in the mountains of Georgia, so northeast Georgia, a little town called Cornelia. So I was at First Baptist Church, Cornelia. Great location, loved it, learned how to be a pastor, and there about 9 years, and then we came here in 2019. We love Gainesville. We love Central Florida, and it's just been a great place to pastor. And we love our church. It's an incredible church.
Going to school in Fort Worth. My son is there right now, finishing up his master's degree.
Okay.
And that is a gorgeous campus up there.
It is.
Or I should say over there.
Yes. Yes. It's a nice place.
Did you like Texas life?
We enjoyed Fort Worth a lot. My wife worked for the zoo when we were there. We were young and before kids, and it was a really great. We had a lot of our friends that were. It was kind of that, you know, graduate school, you know, experience, and lots of, you know, had some friends at TCU. We loved our connections we made at the seminary, and we didn't live on the seminary; lived off the campus, and but we had a really nice time. Love Texas.
Texas is great. I bet you like barbecue now.
We like Alabama barbecue. We never could quite get used to brisket as much as we like pork, but you know, we still eat it though for sure.
Oh, that's great. And it's a gorgeous area again, and that campus is one of the most storied, beautiful campuses that I've visited in a long time. So it's really great to know that you spent time in Fort Worth.
And yes.
Did you ever have a chance to go to the Stampede there?
No. I mean, yes.
To the rodeo?
Yes. We did go to the rodeo, and we did go up to the stockyards and, mm-hmm. and all of that, too.
I said Stampede.
Yep.
That's right. It was stockyards.
Yep, to the stockyards.
Yeah, and
you
the rodeo.
You said Stampede, and what I remember is Dolly's Stampede up in Pigeon Forge. That's what I remembered
yeah,
in my
that's
head.
That's right. That's
so
what was
I was
my
like,
mind
oh, wait,
too.
Stampede in Fort Worth. Yeah,
yeah
the stockyards. The stockyards. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. The food. We fell in love with Tex-Mex and all of that food there. It was so good.
I got to visit there one time as well. Got to see an honest-to-goodness rodeo there.
Yep.
And the fun thing about the stockyards is that they invite everybody that was in the crowd, at least that day. There weren't a whole lot of people. This is pre-COVID. There weren't a whole lot of people there, but we all got to go out onto the inner part of the ring and greet the cowboys. And
oh, how fun.
Pet the horses.
Yeah.
Oh, that was so much fun.
Very nice.
Eric Spivey from First Baptist Church in Gainesville. We'll be back with him in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike. Don't go away. You're in tune to The Shepherd.
Have you been considering a new career path? Do you miss that feeling of making a real difference? As Florida's top Christian college, Palm Beach Atlantic University Orlando can help you get there. And you can find out more in person on Saturday, May 22nd at 10 a.m. This free event gives you a chance to see all that you can become through Palm Beach Atlantic University Orlando. PBA's Orlando campus is just off I-4 next to the Mall of Millennia. Call them today at 844-PBA-ORLANDO. That's 844-PBA-ORLANDO. Palm Beach Atlantic University Orlando. Education for your soul as well as your mind.
What an honor it is to have Eric Spivey, who is the senior pastor of First Baptist in Gainesville, here with me here today. Eric, we've already talked in segment one about this building project, but we also mentioned that First Baptist used to be more in the downtown Gainesville area. It's an older church, been around a long time. I know you would know the history of what caused that congregation to say, let's move to the kind of the outside of the area, which now is still part of Gainesville.
That's
Gainesville
right.
grew
That's right.
to the west.
That's right.
So what was all
so,
of yeah, that history
so,
like?
So First Baptist is a 151-year-old church. We had a whole bunch of 150-year anniversary celebrations planned for last year that mm-hmm. we did not get a chance to do. We'll figure out when we get a chance to celebrate. We're just trying to get started back again soon.
All of that probably fell due to COVID.
Oh, yeah, because of COVID.
Yeah.
And so the church has, in its early history, started in 1870, you know, had several different early locations in Gainesville. And so, but the site that we that they settled in and finally and where they began to build their building was kind of a block of ultimately kind of a whole block there in downtown Gainesville. And so as things changed in the 20th and from moving from 20th century to 21st century, you know, a huge sanctuary that filled us that we were able to fill in the 1950s no longer were able to fill. The upkeep became pretty strong. And it was right as this sort of shift in sort of downtown redevelopment was taking place in mm-hmm. early 2000s or mid 2000s, and so an opportunity came up where some developers came to the church and said, "We think that we could make you an offer," and the church began to pray about that, and they began to think about what is it that the Lord has for us to do?
Yeah.
What is our dream for what God can do for us, and how might this play a part of that?
Mm-hmm.
And they entered into a pretty long discernment process of trying to figure that out. And ultimately, that discernment process led them out to our present space out in Northwest Gainesville at the end of 39th Avenue.
After 140 years,
yes.
That's a big decision at that point, 140 years old.
It's a major piece about who we are as a church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're a church that's been around for a long time, a lot of people have a lot of connections to the space, and that space is sacred and it's important space. But I think one of the things that really attracted me to our church, and I think that sort of lives inside our DNA, is that the church was willing to say, what is it that God really has for us? Is it just about making sure that we keep this building alive, or is it about keeping the you know, about being a part of God's kingdom, what God can do mm-hmm. in us? And so having that shift away from one space and the building of another really opened up this church to the Spirit of God. And I've just never seen anything quite like it. The church is just poised to say, how can we be the best expression of God's church on this corner? How can we share the love of Christ to our neighbors, to our community? How can we be a part of helping them to grow in their faith in a way that when they're a part of us, they can see the Lord working in their lives so that from year to year, you're seeing that you're growing in your faith, that God's moving in your life. And it's just a really powerful thing. I keep trying to help when I ask our folks, what does it mean to be a part of First Baptist Church? And what keeps drawing you there? Why is it that you are there? I mean, part of it, and it keeps coming back about who this expression of the church is. I was reading something recently. Have you ever noticed in Revelation, when John writes to the seven churches in Revelation, and they're in Asia Minor, and he doesn't write to the church. He writes to the angel at the church mm-hmm. in Ephesus, to the angel at the church in Laodicea, at the angel, you know, and it's not how Paul writes. When Paul writes, he writes to the brothers and sisters in mm-hmm. Corinth or those kind of things. And one of this writers was helping me sort of reframe that a little bit. He says, what is that angel? I mean, what if the angel is sort of the expression of who we are together? So we know we are all these individuals that worship in this space. What if the angel of the church is sort of this framework of who we are together, the spirit? What is the spirit of who we are? And that spirit of First Baptist is one of the things that's most alive. It is a place that accepts you for who you are, that takes you in, that loves you, that receives you, and then says, But let's not stay there. Let's figure out what the Lord has for you. When the Lord comes and works in your life, how can that change you? How does that help you turn from sin? How does that help you turn to Christ? How does that help you become more loving? How does that help you in your relationship with your husband, with your wife, with your kids, with your grandparents? How does that? Because ultimately, when we're doing that, we're being transformed. That we become this body of faith that is being transformed because we are living Christ's way together. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, that shifts all about what we do as a church. It's no longer just about the programming, about how great something might be or something is, but about how are we living for Christ and how are we measuring, how are we loving Christ more today? How are we loving God with all of our hearts, soul, minds, and strength today? How are we loving each other and loving more than ourselves? How is that working? And it's just a really powerful story of this church. And it's a real, you know, as I've tried to continue to dig down into who the heart of our church is, and it really is about this idea of discipleship, that we are being transformed into the image of Jesus for the sake of the world, that when we become more like Jesus, he takes us and he doesn't leave us there, and begins to use us in our homes, in our schools, in our workplaces. He sends us places. We become part of this kingdom of God that's alive in Gainesville. It's alive in the world, and it's a really exciting part, I think, about who we are as a church.
It really is exciting to hear that, because you're right. When you have a church congregation that has been built on the history that First Baptist was and had 140 years. That's really remarkable. And I would dare say that the percentage of churches that are around in the country today, I don't know what percentage would be that they have over 100 years of history, but it would be a very small percentage of the total number of churches. So to realize that, number one, they had the vision and the desire to not just stay comfortable where they were or where their history was lying, but they moved and went out to an area where they could see the purposes of God for today. That's really a commendable thing.
Yes. I mean, to see history as the foundation, and that there are these different seasons. I mean, when in 1870, Gainesville was just starting, but these group of people gather together. They want an expression of Baptist faith. I mean, Florida is still a frontier, state during that time.
No air conditioning.
And they sort of have this vision of being an expression of the Baptist faith in this community. And season after season, the church continues to grow. It continues to become sort of this. I mean, it was a beautiful expression of 20th century church. I mean, mm-hmm. We were engaged in all the parts of downtown, all the parts of the university, all interwoven into our history. But ultimately, we began to say, okay, what's the next expression? What's the next expression of who we need to be? Mm-hmm. And that vision of saying we want that that our past is what we build off of, but it doesn't define us completely. There's also this, what does it mean to be an expression of the community of faith today in the 20th century, in the 2020, now in the 2020s, this third decade as we live into that, because things are going to continue to change. I mean, COVID has accelerated a lot of things happening in both in the culture, but especially within congregational life. And I think that those things that have been accelerating are going to continue to do so. And so our task is, what does it now mean, this new opportunity that's going to take place? Mm-hmm. How are we going to take what we've been given and really now live into it? And I think it's going to be something that both draws people into the church, that continues to help them see how their families and their kids and others can grow in faith because they're part of our church, because they find something there they haven't seen in other places. But also as they begin to leave there, or to look outward from our campus to the community to say, how can we now take what we've gained in this space to live for Jesus where we are? So I'm really looking forward to it. I think that's a great opportunity. Our future is really bright, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what God does in our church and our community through us.
You know, you mentioned the changes that COVID brought, and that phrase about pivoting. A lot of churches have had to pivot and kind of like redirect maybe even their programming and how they do it. And we all became familiar with this term called live streaming. And
yep.
That was forced upon us. But, another thing that happened long before COVID would be the changes in worship style. And knowing that 50 years ago, most Baptist churches would be pretty consistent, I would think, in how their singing to the Lord happened. There would be pews with backs that had hymn holders, hymn racks on it.
We've got them. Yes.
And you still have that. So I was going to ask, how has your church pivoted with all of that?
Well, we were already beginning to rethink what does worship mean and what is, and for our church. We have a strong history of good, strong liturgical and traditional worship at our church. And we've had a, but we also have this expression of this new understanding of worship coming through. And so part of, before we even began COVID, we were looking for a new person to kind of come in and guide us along the way. And so he started, like, the first Sunday we moved, we moved to video and all of that. But one of the things we've sort of learned is worship is not about, for us, it's not about worship style, but it's really about how do we engage every generation in both in music and in connection. How does worship bring us into the presence of God? Mm-hmm. How do we do that in a way that is both faithful to our tradition and to our understanding of the faith, but also an opportunity for new people to connect with us? And I think, you know, one of the interesting parts about being on our corner is that we're a unique expression of worship, even in our part of Gainesville. I mean, we take worship seriously. We have incredible musicians. But we still are led by a pipe organ and a piano, along with a variety of other instrumentation. And then we have a praise band that comes in and leads us once a month with bringing in new worship music with us. And so the other day, our minister of worship, Don, and we had a praise song. We had a variety of choruses from the 70s and 80s. We had some classic Fanny Crosby hymns. And then we had this Taze music from France, which is this sort of medieval kind of chanting, kind of connecting to Christ. And it was just all woven into this one worship service, and they all built around a particular set of scripture guiding us to reflect on what does it mean to, I think that Sunday was about the love of Christ. And mm-hmm. and so that to me is sort of this way that where everyone can sort of find their place, but you feel like there is this sort of appreciation for really great music from all different styles, all different ways. And so it's not necessarily a blending as much as it is a celebration of all of that, and where everyone can find music when they hear it that speaks to their soul. Because there's this music that connects to our soul, who we are, because it helps us to connect. And usually it's about where we were worshiping when we were teenagers, mm-hmm. you know? And so that for me is a really an exciting part. No, it's still not, we're still on a governor. We're still wearing masks. Our choir is still wearing masks. We're still, you know, limited to what we can do. But we're looking forward to seeing as all this COVID pieces begin to thin out and end over the next few months, to seeing what that might look like.
Now, we were talking a little earlier. You are looking forward, as I think most pastors are, to the time where you can release those kinds of occurrences, happenings where masks are having to be worn, especially because it's difficult. And there are a lot of people that I've heard are still kind of like staying home until the mask ordinance is released. And I'm sure you've tasted a bit of that as well.
You know, our task has been to keep our community and our church safe. And we feel like that we've been worshiping in person since August. We feel like we've created some procedures that allow those who wanted to worship in person to be able to do so, but still kept us safe, and those who needed to worship online to stay there. We've beginning to see more folks come back into worship since more vaccines. I think it's going to be, as we were talking earlier, I think it's going to be a slow rollout for us and for churches that it doesn't all of a sudden one day you have all these things, one day you don't. I think for us it's going to be a slow process through the summer. As I was telling you, we're going to have a grand reopening of church in September, where we sort of come down and we sort of make some decisions on what our worship time is going to be and what time we're doing Bible study and what that looks like and what weekday ministry looks like but with a sense of purpose or behind it. Mm-hmm. So COVID gives us an opportunity to sort of sort through things. What things did we do that really worked and want to make sure it continue? What things that we did that, yeah, we really haven't missed very much, why don't we start it back? And what things should we be doing we haven't been doing that now we can? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a great opportunity in that to utilize this time to to see what God might do for us in the future.
That's wonderful. Eric Spivey, the senior pastor at First Baptist in Gainesville. And we're going to be back for one more segment with Eric. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike.
Are you looking to make a fresh career start? As Florida's top Christian college, Palm Beach Atlantic University Orlando knows your faith is important to you, and it should be to your school as well. PBA Orlando offers a faith-based experience unlike any other. Whether it's a degree in leadership ministry or counseling, PBA combines biblical concepts from exceptional professors who bring years of real-world experience as leaders in their fields. Call them today at 844-PBA-ORLANDO. That's 844-PBA-ORLANDO. Education for your soul as well as your mind.
It has been so much fun to be up in the studios in Gainesville for this episode and talking to Eric Spivey, who is the senior pastor at First Baptist in Gainesville. Beautiful campus. And give us your website, by the way, if you could.
Sure, fbcgainesville.net. So, First Baptist Gainesville, Florida. There's a Gainesville, Georgia.
That's right.
I had one of our older members tune in to watch us one Sunday on their computer, and they watched all of First Baptist Gainesville, Georgia's worship service, and they said, "That's not my preacher." And so, finally, they got the person helping us, and they watched came back and worshiped with us then. So, yeah, fbcgainesville.net. You can email me at eric.spivey@fbcgainesville.net. We'd love to hear from anyone.
Yeah, you would appreciate this story because of your time in Georgia, but we heard recently at the FCA banquet, we had Mark Richt, who
yes.
was the former
yes. Georgia.
Coach at Georgia, the Bulldogs, and he was joking about when he received the invitation to come to Gainesville's FCA that he accepted thinking it was Gainesville, Georgia. And then he said, I think, of course, it's all a joke. But he was talking about, I'm not sure I would have done it if I realized it was Gainesville, Florida. Oh, my goodness. But that was
not
a funny
story. Not a lot of love lost between the Dogs and the Gators, I know.
Yeah, he told us all of that. When he was coach at Georgia, he would not even let his football players drink Gatorade.
Yes.
Oh, that's funny. You know, Eric, as you have mentioned already, we've seen in our lifetime now the big rollover of millenniums from the 20th to the 21st century, and you know the changes that the 21st century have been maybe even thought would take place. There have been a lot of changes.
Yes.
A lot of shifts in our culture in America have happened in the last couple of years, and a lot of them are for many people very concerning shifts. There's a lot of wondering what's going to happen now as we go deep into the 2020s. What do you see as the most important thing that pastors and churches need to keep in mind as we go into this balance of 2021?
Well, one of the things that I do along with, besides pastoring, is I also work with a group called Pinnacle Leadership Associates. And one of our tasks is really helping churches sort of make this shift, how to move from what we used to be to who we can be, what God wants us to be. And we've talked about this a lot. And one of the books written by my friend Mark Tisworth is called Making the Shift. And it's just about this whole idea here of shifting. And there are several shifts that he talks about. One of the shifts is from membership to sort of a form to discipleship. So from thinking about that, our role as when we think about people who are part of our church, you know, in the 20th century, you were part of an institution. You were a part. You came into a church to gain, and you were there's some expectations about what you wanted from the church, what you could gain from the church, and what the church and how the church utilized you. And the shift we've talked about is the shift to discipleship, where now our task is not about being a member of an institution, but helping people make this shift to seeing themselves as a Christ follower, seeing themselves as following after Jesus. And how can we as a church help them to make that possible? Help us, mm-hmm. our members and our people around us, helping us to see that our task is to learn more about prayer, learn more about the scriptures, learn more about the disciplines that draw us into Christ-likeness. And how do we focus in on doing that? I mean, in the 20th century, we had a lot of programs that did that, a lot of Sunday school classes and Bible study classes and small group classes. And they were all, they were all sort of mixed in different ways. And we often thought more about, can I show up in the program and how many people are in the program, to how can we measure how people are following after Christ differently? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really key shift of thinking about discipleship and that purpose and that role. And I think another kind of key shift that we talk a lot about from a tractional model to a missional model. So I think one of the key ideas in the 20th century was, let's keep building a bigger church, bigger program. Let's make sure if we do everything with excellence, people will keep coming. And if they keep coming, then we can keep all of our programs going. But what happens when people all of a sudden don't start coming? What happens when, as we've seen generation to generation, from our, you know, builders to our baby boomers on down to the millennials, where you just see less and less people within those generations who see church as a priority? So you can do the same thing you did 30 years ago, and you're going to get less people just because there are less people who are looking for a church. Mm-hmm. And so when you shift from this idea of attractional to a missional, you begin to say that our task is not just to attract people, but our task is to take Christ to where people are. That's one of the things that sort of fits into sort of my history. You know, when I was doing resort ministry, our task was to take the gospel to people who live, work, and play in these different communities, people who don't think about Christ, but who are still in need. How can we be the presence of Christ in those places? So as a pastor, that means for me, how can we be a presence of Christ in our community in a way that when people become a surprise with the gospel, mm-hmm. where they see that God, that this church isn't just about what they can get from you, but about how they can be the presence of Christ to you and help you in your life, whether it's helping you find Christ for the first time, whether it's helping you in your own, with your own struggles and challenges in your life. And I think those shifts are important. And I think they continue to guide us into thinking about what does it look like today? And some churches, I mean, you're forced to make the shift. Life circumstances change pretty fast, and you've got now you got to either adapt or you don't. Mm-hmm. You know, and some churches, you know, you've been the very best at this in the 20th century, and you've been able to kind of keep it going for a while, and now you're trying to figure out, okay, what do I do? How do I make that shift? Can I still make it? And there's a lot, and I think a lot of things have happened during the pandemic that have impacted a lot of us in all of our churches. And I think our key challenge is not to let these things die. We talk about coming back better. How do we, when we come back, we can take some of those same lessons we've learned, some of the adaptions that we've made, and let them continue. So that I think the post-COVID church is not going to, it's going to have some of the same flavors as what we were doing before, but it's not going to be the same. And people have learned that we don't need all of our lives to, you know, to have to be everything to be so full. We can let some things, we can let some things go. There's some joys that come about, spending time with your family or spending time with those that you love. And how do we continue to still do that and still be a part of the church that we love as well?
Now, many of the families that are part of churches today that are having to shift along with it, because the families have been thrown a major shift this last year, with many of them having to bring their kids home and become homeschoolers, yep, for the very first time. And so I know that's impacting church life as well, as the rigors and what's being called upon with families. What are you seeing as the most important thing that churches can do to help their families through this time?
I think there's a lot of grace. Just giving people grace and giving people ability to give themselves grace. That it's okay if we don't do it all right. If our lives aren't quite as perfect as the people we see on social media, that our lives are not always going to look perfect. So I think there's a lot of grace that we're working to provide folks. I think you will continue to see this hybrid connection to church. I think that will continue. What we've experienced during COVID is not going to go away. We're still going to be live streaming. You're still going to connecting to people as much on phones and social media as well. You're already seeing churches where you find people wanting to join your church who don't live in your community. What does that look like? How do you do that? How do you be a part of your church and not be connected in locally? That's all interesting challenges for churches.
I just had a conversation with a Gainesville pastor who was alerted to the fact that there's a family in the Villages that's watching every live stream service.
Yes.
And feels a part of that congregation.
Exactly.
So that's got to be figured out.
It's a great opportunity to try to figure that out. You know, you find people who connect to you that are part of you but don't necessarily live where you are. How do you do that? I'm not sure yet. Mm-hmm. I think churches, so much of our processes as churches are often revolved around incarnation. We are all right here, but now we're all going to be spread out. It's going to be an interesting way to figure that out. And I think churches are just going to have to take people where they are, receive them where they are, figure out, okay, if our task is to care for folks, how do we help them? How do we do that? Let's not let the way we've always done it, whether it's through our bylaws or other kind of ways, to keep us holding us back from what this could be. And so that's going to force us to ask other kinds of questions and to maybe make some changes that we've never thought about before.
Now, some of the changes that are being talked about right now in our government, with things like the Equality Act being so talked about and how that could and will impact church life, are any of those issues that are out there right now on the horizon, are they making any impact in your local congregation at this point?
No. I mean, our church lives to follow after Jesus. Our task is to help people learn how to live in this world, even as the world continues to change. I mean, the world's been changing for, 151 years, and we're all, but our task is to, we have a rule of life. We call it the trellis. We have 8 spiritual practices at our church that are identity in Christ, worship, scriptures, prayer, rest, generosity, and mission. And these things, and our fellowship, and these things sort of guide us about how we follow and live the way of Jesus in the world. Mm-hmm. And if we can help our folks do that, however the world changes, whether it becomes more secular, whether it becomes more religious, it helps us get centered on Christ. And then we can figure out what that means for our families, what kind of, how we live in a public life, what role we need to play in the public sphere. But it all centers around Christ. Mm-hmm. And when things center around Christ, it becomes less about trying to be cultural warriors and more about being Christ-centered people who are living in this public space.
What's the most exciting aspect about the balance of this year when you look? Would it be the September gathering or the relaunching, if you will, of First Baptist?
I mean, I think it's been so great. We had a wonderful Easter. We did a parking lot worship service. We did a sanctuary worship service, live streamed that. And it was just so wonderful to see people that we haven't seen in a year. And we tried to make it a place where everyone can come to worship, no matter what kind of challenges that you were having with the virus, and that you could come and just worship, whether in your car or outside or inside. And it was just this great opportunity to begin to see our folks again. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing I'm looking forward to is just living into what God can continue to do for our church, that this God has prepared us, God has moved us to this corner, God has been shaping us, and God now is ready for us to live that out. Mm-hmm. And I think there's going to be a lot of changes over the summer. We're still trying to slowly figure out what that's going to look like. But I think if we can come back in September with this new vision, this new ministry plan, that's exciting.
That's very much exciting.
Yes.
And looking forward to hearing all about it. Again, your campus is one of the most beautiful, situated right on the corner of the beautiful 241 and 39th Avenue in Gainesville.
Yes.
Got to love that drive there.
Well, I love it. Hey, and we've got a beautiful prayer walk. So if you're ever driving by over in the corner of our parking lot, you'll see a little gate, and you can be welcome to walk through there. And if you just want to spend some time in the woods and be reminded with some prayers and scripture as you walk, stop in and come do it. We want to share that with our community.
Eric Spivey, Senior Pastor at First Baptist, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it greatly.
It's wonderful to have you here. And friends, thanks for being with us as well. We'll catch you next time right here on Afternoons with Mike.
Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by Palm Beach Atlantic University, Orlando.